Jais Parikar Sri Sri Guru Granga Sri Sri Gandharvika Giridhari Ju Ki Jai. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Swami Sri Bhaktivedanta Prabhupadaya Te Namaha Gurvagyam Sri Rasi Dritva Shaktya Vesha Sarupine Hare Krishneti Mantrena Paschatya Prachatarine Vishvacharya Prabharya Divya Karunya Murtaye Sri Bhagavat Madhurya Gita Gyana Pradayane Gaura Sri Rupa Siddhanta Sarasvati Nashevane Radha Krishna Padamboja Bringaya Gurave Namaha. Jai, so we're observing today the disappearance of His Divine Grace, Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa. Parivijakacharya Varya Ashto Tarasatta Sri Srimad Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada. When Srila Prabhupada was explaining this disappearance of his own guru, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I believe it was in Los Angeles in 1968, he quoted a verse explaining the a benediction a sage had given, some blessing. And the blessing was to the son of a king, Rajputra, the son of a muni, a sadhu, Muniputra, a Vaishnava saint, and to a butcher. And the four blessings he offered to these four different personalities. For the prince, don't die. That was his suggestion, his blessing. Do not die. And for the son of the sadhu, the sage, don't live. And for the Vaishnava, live or die, as either both are equal. And for the butcher, don't die, don't live. So then Srila Prabhupada explained the meanings. For the prince is the son of a king, then he is enjoying the worldly opulence of a king. He's living in the family of a king. He's living in the palace of a king. So all sorts of material enjoyments are available to him. So therefore, but at the end of his life, when he dies, then the reaction will come for the enjoyments that he's received through exploitation of the environment. So recommendation is, don't die. Better you live and live forever. Don't die, because when you die, then you're going to have to suffer from so many things. The reaction to your worldly pursuits, worldly deeds. And to the sadhu that Prabhupada explained as a brahmachari, living under the direction of a spiritual master, oh, immediately you can die. It would be good for you if you immediately leave this world, because after this you will go to an auspicious place, to Vaikuntha, and there you can will have the opportunity to enjoy the results of your tapa, your austerities and spiritual practices. But in this life, as a brahmachari, then you're Serving your guru under strict rules and regulations, living very strictly under the guidance of your guru. And so that tapasya involves some sort of suffering, austerity. Sadhana, Srila Govinda Maharaj describes sadhana as meaning that which you do not want to do, doing that which you don't want to do. So that's the life of a brahmachari. So better that you die when you leave this world, you'll get the happy result of your austerities and your obedience to your guru. And for the Vaishnava saint, the blessing was live, you may live or you may die, as you like. Both, why? Because both are same. For the Vaishnava, in this life he is serving the Lord and his devotees, and in the next life he's serving the Lord and his devotees. So for the Vaishnava, living in this life or the next life, same thing. And so Prabhupada was using this to explain the disappearance of his guru, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. For the Vaishnava, he is appearing in this world or disappearing, and both are equal, because he is not subject to the laws of material nature. He is not appearing in this world as a result of karma or some other thing like like that. He is appearing for the enactment of the Leela of the Lord, and the Vaishnava Guru is appearing to some prospect to some relief to the conditioned souls, and help them to proceed on their own journey back to home, back to Godhead. So live or die, doesn't matter. For the butcher, don't live and don't die. Both are very bad for you. And Prabhupada explained what he is doing. He is killing the animals, and the blood he is seeing, staining his clothing, and living all around in some bloody, ghastly scene. So in this life, very horrible, very unpleasant, and disturbing circumstance. And his next life also will be very horrible, because he will have to suffer the results of the karma from killing so many living entities, so many animals, for his trade. So for the butcher, don't die and don't live. Both are bad for you. So in this way, we should consider the life of the Vaishnava. It is always auspicious. He is engaged always in the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, whether it be in this world or in the spiritual world. No difference for him. I wrote something recently to some friend talking about we herald both the sunrise and the sunset. So although the the former is more joyful, the sunset is more joyful, and the latter, the sunrise is joyful, the sunset, bittersweet. There's no question that the disappearance of the guru, that it is very unhappy for the disciples. And we are in our present moment seeing why it is the cause of unhappiness. The For the Vaishnava, he is no difference for him. But for those of us who are the disciples, then it is a serious time for where we can expect that very serious and consequential events will occur and will be instrumental in the formation of our future in Krishna consciousness. A test for the disciples. Are we observing the formalities as a matter of etiquette? Are we following the spiritual master as a matter of formality or etiquette? Is it an ostentatious attempt, only showing some spirit of following because he's there? If we don't follow, not following will be very obvious. If he gives a direction and the direction is not followed, then that is very obvious to everyone. Oh, why are you not following? Gurudev said, do this. Why are you not doing that? But after his disappearance, then so many instructions he has given during his lifetime, and then they immediately become subject to interpretation. And those who want to interpret, then they will be misguided by those interpretations, and whoever follows them, they will also be misguided. But that is, unfortunately, we have seen that is the way for many, very unfortunately. After Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, we saw this and exhibited in some extreme degree. And it is a very surprising and shocking thing, shocking development. Oh, so many, they appeared so loyal. They are so senior, so dedicated. Many things they showed during the presence of Sri Guru. And after his disappearance, one by one, we may see, not always, of course, but we may see that those who appeared to be such stalwarts, one by one, they are falling away and returning to some their former life or some previous position, and many things. So Srila Prabhupada remarked on one of these occasions, and I have noted it many times, he was very proud of his disciples. He had reason to be proud. I was listening to a recording of Swami Maharaj Prabhupada. He was talking with Haryagriva and having a long conversation, maybe 2 hours or more. And the conversation was about a play that Prabhupada wanted to see enacted, the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Well, he was describing this to his disciple, Haryagriva. And Haryagriva also was primarily responsible or largely responsible for the first publications of Bhagavad Gita, for doing the editing work of Bhagavad Gita. He was a scholar. He was an English scholar. I didn't know him, actually, but from what I have heard from others. He was an English scholar, and many times I've read Bhagavad Gita of Srila Swami Maharaj, Bhagavad Gita as it is, and reading it, I am astonished how these men who were with Prabhupada, maybe only for 2 years, maybe 3 years, new devotees, and they were able to do wonderful work. Old issues of Back to Godhead magazines were featuring articles of Srila Prabhupada's disciples. Young disciples, again, 1, 2, 3 years old. They're writing articles. They're being published in Back to Godhead magazine. And these articles are very nice explanations of Krishna consciousness, how to become Krishna conscious, and how to live as a devotee, and how to follow the guru, what is guru. All many important subjects covered and explained very nicely. And another thing, listening to some of these recordings, room conversations of Srila Prabhupada with his with different people, and he is looking for some help to remember a verse, and sometimes one of his disciples is supplying the verse for him. And again, maybe they have joined 3, 4 years beforehand, and they are studying very carefully the scriptures, and so much so that they are able to help with the verses like this. So. And that continued. I was discussing with someone the other day, when Prabhupada disappeared, but prior to his disappearance, he named 11 disciples and said that they should be gurus. And in one of these, one of the conversations I was hearing, just we'll do it later. Here, Leela. You can just come around this side. You can just. Okay. Can you do it there?
Yeah. Okay.
Carefully. Jai Shri Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Shri Prabhupada's Tirobhav Mahamahotsava Ki Jai. Okay, Leah, no. Okay. That's good. So these young devotees, Prabhupada began his preaching in the United States in New York in roughly 1966. Prabhupada disappeared in 1977, and he named 11 of his disciples to act as gurus, to be gurus, not act, but act or be gurus after his disappearance. And that means that the most time they could have spent with Srila Prabhupada is maybe a maximum of 11 years, something like that. So 8, 9, 10, 11 years, depending on when they joined. And these still young men, mostly probably not over 35 years old for the most part. If they joined at 25 was when Prabhupada was first preaching, someone who was 25 was an older man. Many of his disciples joined 18, 19, 20, 21, somewhere, you know, either around the college age. Many joined, few after graduating from college, or some after graduating, etc. So, heavy responsibility, and uh, for many, it seemed to prove too much, and understandably so, not surprising. From my view, all certainly appeared to try their best, to do their best to accept the responsibility. And so very difficult, very heavy job, and given to very young disciples. So of course there were difficulties. Prabhupada's disappearance, when the guru disappears, then, as I was mentioning, then disciples who were held in check by the physical presence of the guru, who had their own interest, or had their own interest, let's say, were trying to dovetail in the service of their guru. Interest can mean ambition, for example. Nothing wrong with ambition. Ambition is a good thing. Ambition to serve the guru, ambition to serve Krishna, to accept responsibility, and so forth. These sorts of things are very good, very helpful. And the guru needs ambitious young men and women to help in the service of preaching Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada collected many. And they did amazing things. So 17 volumes of Chaitanya Charitamrita, several volumes of Bhagavad Gita as it is, 30-something volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada translated, but he supplied that, and these other disciples of his did the rest. Editing, proofreading, printing, photographs for the plates, for the pictures in the books, everything required, and these books are such amazing, wonderful books. When I was talking with Jai Dwaita Maharaj several weeks ago, he came for a visit, and I tried to pick his brain a little bit to find out some of the details about Prabhupada's publishing. What was the process that Prabhupada used for publishing his books? I was surprised that by one thing in particular, because I'm interested in transcribing the tapes of Srila Sridhar Maharaj and Srila Govinda Maharaj, and one thing that is very obvious to me in the transcription, that it's very difficult to get very accurate transcriptions. The general idea is not hard, but to get word for word accurate transcriptions is very, very hard for devotees to do, for a number of reasons. Just the pronunciation of Srila Sridhar Maharaj or Srila Govinda Maharaj may be unclear. In many cases, the recording is not such a good quality recording. The microphone is like this one, some distance away. And Srila Sridhar Maharaj is speaking in a soft voice, and the microphone is not picking up everything so clearly. And so there are noises in the background, birds chirping and machines running and trucks and buses going down the street and all sorts of things like this. And people talking over. The guru is saying something and some disciple is speaking at the same time, and then those sounds are mixing, then it's hard to tell what is Gurudev saying. So I know these difficulties. And then one of the biggest difficulties, I think, is patience and tenacity. It takes great tenacity to play, listen, then rewind, play, listen, rewind, play, listen, rewind, because Some of these things are very hard to catch, and you have to listen over and over and over again just to pick out maybe one or two words to be sure about their accuracy. So I was wondering, so this must have been a problem. How did, you know, Prabhupada was, this is how Prabhupada produced his books. He dictated on a dictaphone, and the tape was given to a disciple, then the disciple transcribed that, just like we're doing, listening and transcribing. And then, to my surprise, in the earlier days, the tapes were then sent back to Prabhupada and used again. So they didn't have to buy extra tapes. So it wasn't, those tapes weren't kept. Most of those early recordings are just gone, recorded over, and maybe recorded over again and again. So I was wondering, well, how do you check these things? If Prabhupada gives some dictation and the first person that transcribes it, then if the next person has a question about something, how is that resolved? And no way to resolve it accurately, because the tape is now gone back and Prabhupada is using it to transcribe another chapter or something. So there are undoubtedly many mistakes in Srila Prabhupada's books. Mistakes meaning that it is not precisely, exactly, word for word what Srila Prabhupada dictated. It must be. Can't be otherwise. And so I asked Srila, Sripad Jayadvaita Maharaj about that. And he said, you know, Prabhupada was not very concerned. Prabhupada just, he stressed, he wanted these things done, and he wanted them done yesterday. He didn't want them done tomorrow. He wanted his books, he wanted these things done. And whether something was not 100% was not a question for him. Must be done, get it out, print it, and distribute it. That was his idea. And that idea created a miracle that the world has never seen before or since. And that is the miracle that people read these books and became devotees of Krishna. That's the miracle. And Prabhupada was very proud of his disciples. And in India, he would do Pandal festivals, big festivals, sometimes 25,000 people, like the rock concerts in the West. Tens of thousands of people would show up to see the Srila Swami Maharaj with his Western disciples, yeah, Western and Eastern, but mostly Western, chanting and dancing, doing Harinam Sankirtan. His disciples would also preach, explain Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, give discourses on the philosophy, answer questions. And Prabhupada would preach. And Prabhupada invariably, someone would ask something like this. Well, Swamiji, you know, so-and-so yogi, sannyasi, mystic, whatever, is showing some miracle. What miracle can you show? And so Prabhupada, on one such occasion that I remember, waved his arm like this, and he says, "You see, these mlechas, they've all become devotees of Krishna." What greater miracle? Is there a greater miracle than that? Did everyone show himself perfect? Maybe not. Maybe we don't know yet. Most likely, the answer is yes. So the answer is yes, because what I heard from Srila Sridhar Maharaj is explaining the position of one of his god brothers, who was given and accepted the position of acharya, but very soon it was discovered that he was had fallen from the position of acharya. He was not able to properly represent the position of acharya. Really, he disgraced the seat of the acharya, acharya of Gaudiya Math, acharya after Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. What was the disgrace? That it was found some love letters that he had written to some lady, and Srila Sridhar Maharaj, in a meeting of god brothers, where director of the meeting was challenging that if anyone there was a love letter produced and a signature, and the signature was of this acharya, and the person directing the meeting was threatening that anyone who will say that this signature is valid, I will see that they go to jail. I will put them in prison. That was his threat. And Srila Sridhar Maharaj said, give me the pen, I will sign. Give me the paper, I will sign it. Meaning, I will swear by affidavit that the signature is that of the acharya, the signature on the love letter. So this meant the end of that acharya's position, more or less. Great number of the sannyasis of Saraswati Thakur that were working under that acharya left the mission following Srila Sridhar Maharaj, who left that mission disgusted. Could not tolerate it. Srila Govinda Maharaj, describing this, said, it is not so much problem for a Vaishnava, but it is big problem for acharya. So Srila Sridhar Maharaj demanded the acharya must leave his post, and if he can receive nourishment from his god brothers and again show that he has rectified himself and that he can maintain the proper position, then he can be established again. And of course his supporters wouldn't do that. They saw, oh, that would be big trouble politically, the won't look good for us, whatever, and so they could not do that. But the point that I want to make is that Srila Sridhar Maharaj, years later, although this was the cause of his leaving Gaudiya Math under that acharya, and he, as Srila Govinda Maharaj said, led the revolt against this acharya and found his actions despicable and unbefitting and so on and so forth. And worse than that, then the man even began to preach against the Siddhanta of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But Srila Sridhar Maharaj referred to him as Prabhu. And he explained to us once why he referred to him as Prabhu. He said, because I consider that he is one of the eternal Parshadas, eternal servants of our Guru Maharaj. So he will have to suffer for his offense for some time. But later, in some other lifetime or whatever, certainly he will come back and serve Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. Because that is his eternal position. So it's easy and it's natural to get caught up in situations such as this one and think everything is hopeless or something, a disciple is useless, and we can be very critical and so many things. And in the moment, it's right to be critical of someone who is not showing the proper standard, and whoever cannot maintain the proper standard should leave the post, especially of acharya. Until he can show that he is up to the task. So my point is that Prabhupada had some thousands of disciples. He was proud of his disciples. He boasted about them and the work that they did, and called them devotees. And in 1976, when Prabhupada was giving another talk on the disappearance day of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said, was talking and said, and all of you will become guru, or should become guru, something like that. We are all students. He was talking about Guru Murkha. Mahaprabhu is explaining his own position. Guru Murkha, foolish, always a foolish person in the before his guru. So Srila Prabhupada was saying, we are always students. We'll always consider ourselves fools before our guru. We are eternally students, but still, we will have to, he wanted that his disciples would all become gurus. And again, remember, maybe the oldest at that time could have been in serving in his mission for 10 years. And he disappeared 1 year after that. So, those who know the history and so forth know that many sannyasis left their position as sannyas, many brahmacharis left their position as brahmacharis, many grihastas left the ashram of grihasta, etc. Many problems occurred after the disappearance of Srila Prabhupada. Many occurred during the time of Srila Prabhupada also, and we got to see how he dealt with those problems. He showed us everything. The books of Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada you will find certainly in every Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Math temple. And especially if there is any English spoken there. So they have been translated, his books have been translated into more than 100 languages. Bhagavad Gita as it is, translated, into so many languages, distributed in so many countries, distributed in the, I believe, hundreds of millions of books, hundreds of millions. At last I heard, if I remember correctly, almost half a billion copies printed. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Half a billion, 400 million. No. What can we say about His divine grace? And his, with such urgency he preached, and with such urgency he translated, so that we would have the foundation, not only his disciples, which for them he said he translated Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because his disciples wanted to read Chaitanya Charitamrita. So for his disciples, but Prabhupada was paradukha-dukhi. He so much wanted to give relief to the suffering of the Jiva souls. And so he pushed his disciples to preach, and especially he pushed his disciples to distribute his books as relief work, to give relief to the conditioned souls, because Prabhupada recognized, like no one else, that there is no other possibility of any relief other than becoming Krishna conscious. And nothing, there is nothing else. There's no food distribution program, no vaccine program, no hospital program, no Medicare, Medicaid, or insurance program. Nothing in this world will do anything. No scientific research. There is no scientific program, biological program, atomic energy program, educational program. There is no program in this world that will give the least relief to the sufferings of the conditioned souls, except for one program, and that is the program of Krishna consciousness. The end. That was Prabhupada's faith, his belief, which he inculcated from his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And that, from the beginning of Prabhupada's life to the end of his life, this was his program, Prabhupada's program. Prabhupada appeared in this world in 1896, and I was surprised to hear something that I had noted years ago. I was when I wrote the preface to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Life and Precepts, I included something that I'll just refer to briefly here. I was going to read some of this, but I don't think there's enough time for that. The significance of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Life and Precepts has also been suggested in the dedication of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Quote, "Dedicated to the sacred service of Srila Satchidananda Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who initiated the teachings of Lord Chaitanya in the Western world, He sent in to McGill University in Calcutta in 1896 this book, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, His Life and Precepts. Bhaktivinoda Thakur did that. In 1896, Srila Prabhupada says, the year of my birth. And the this Life and Precepts, this book was installed in that university library, McGill University, in the year 1896. And I write, the year 1896, therefore, was marked by two auspicious events that changed the course of history. Prior to this time, the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had been confined within the boundaries of India. In this year, however, not only did the first book expounding Mahaprabhu's religion arrive in the Western world, but a personality was born that would spread these teachings to nearly every country on the globe. That's what Srila Prabhupada did. That was his, when I say that was his life start to finish, then the next part of his life was 1922 when he first met his spiritual master, His Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Goswami Maharaj. And when he met His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada came away from that meeting with the impression, with the strong impression, remembrance of what of something Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said to Prabhupada and his friend, two young young men of college age, but Prabhupada had already, I believe, already had left college without graduating to join Gandhi's resistance movement, nonviolence movement. And what Prabhupada took away from that meeting was two things. Oh, Prabhupada says his family, they were worshippers of Nityananda Prabhu and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when he heard the exposition of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he thought, ah, finally, there is someone qualified who can spread the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the other thing was that his guru had asked him, told him that you should preach this message to the Western, in the Western world, to the English-speaking people. And that was his first meeting with Saraswati Thakur in 1922. 14 years later, Prabhupada wrote a letter to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur in December of 1936. On December 13th, Srila Prabhupada said he got the response. Prabhupada had written the letter to his Gurudev. Explaining what am I to do? I am a householder, and my god brothers, they are living in your mats and they are doing so much service for your divine grace. I'm living outside. What can I do? And Prabhupada was saying it like it was some ordinary, like normal transaction between disciple and his guru, requesting, you know, this is my situation. I'm not so happy about it. Others, they're doing something substantial. What am I doing? They are doing so much, etc. Now, Srila Prabhupada received the answer to his letter December 13th, 1936, maybe December 14th. I think it was the 13th, 1936. And in his response, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told him what he told him at that first meeting. You want to do something, try to preach this message in English, the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That will do good for you, and that will do good for everyone who hears it. It is the best and highest good for everyone. So do that. Fifteen days later, December 31, 1936, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, 2 weeks after receiving this letter, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur left this world. So that was his first instruction to Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, and it was his last. And it made so much impression. And Srila Swami Maharaj could not think at that time, 1936, how he could possibly fulfill that desire of his Gurudev. He met Saraswati Thakur in 1922. He said immediately he accepted him as his spiritual master. And he said his initiation was that he was always thinking about that instruction to preach the precepts of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the West, in English. But he didn't take formal initiation until 1933, just over 3 years before Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's disappearance. And in 1965, he came to the United States, came to New York City, and I just like some hurricane entering the coming over the horizon, and then moving the wind, moving everything in its path. Srila Prabhupada's preaching went from New York to San Francisco to London to Canada to Japan, back to India, went all over the world. His preaching, his book distribution, disciples joining, temples forming, miraculous thing. A very short time. A very, very short time. I think 2003. And another little more than a year, United States went to war with Iraq in 2003. In 2013, another year, a little more than a year, will have been 10 years there. In that same amount of time, Srila Prabhupada conquered the world. The United States is still fighting in Iraq, trying to subdue its enemies. So, I wanted to read one other thing which Prabhupada was very happy with. His disciples brought this to him and just shortly before the disappearance, one of the disappearance celebrations of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada read and discussed this with his disciples. Prabhupada was very happy that they had found this. He said he thought it was lost and was very surprised that Guru Das or someone found it, perhaps in London somehow, I don't know how. Oh, yes, in a back issue of the Harmonist magazine. It was published in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Harmonist magazine. And it was written to celebrate the 62nd appearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, a poem that Prabhupada read, composed and read, and the title given here is Vyasa Puja Offering by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Well, his name wasn't, he wasn't Bhaktivedanta Swami then, he was Ace, Abhay Charan. Adore, adore ye all the happy day, blessed than heaven, sweeter than May, when he appeared at Puri, the holy place. My Lord and Master is divine grace. O my Master, the evangelic angel, give us thy light, light up thy candle. Struggle for existence, a human race, the only hope is divine grace. Misled, we are all going astray. Save us, Lord, our fervent pray. Wonder thy ways to turn our face. Adore thy feet, your divine grace. Forgotten Krishna, we fallen souls, paying most heavy the illusion's toll. Darkness around, all untrace. The only hope is divine grace. Message of service thou hast brought, a healthy life as Chaitanya wrought. Unknown to all, it's full of grace. That's your gift, your divine grace. Absolute is sentient, thou hast proved. Impersonal calamity thou hast moved. This gives us a life anew and fresh. Worship thy feet, your divine grace. Had you not come, who had told the message of Krishna forceful and bold? That's your right. You have the mace. Save me, a fallen, your divine grace. The line of service as drawn by you is pleasing and healthy, like morning dew. The oldest of all, but in new dress, miracle done, your divine grace. Abhay Charan Das. February 25, 1935. 62nd appearance day of Prabhupada Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So I'm reading this because Prabhupada was very happy with it. His guru was very happy with it. His guru said it should be published in his magazine, The Harmonist. After this, Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers began to refer to him as poet, Kavi. The poet Abhay Charan. Die. We pray for the grace of our Gurudev, of His Divine Grace, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. May His mercy come to us all. Hare Krishna. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivajakacharya Varya Ashto Tarasata Shishimad Shilesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Haribol, Gaur Haribol.